Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show. I'm Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. I'm a psychoanalyst specializing in food, weight, and body image issues, and I am here to help you lose weight without dieting. Yes, lose weight without dieting. That means no more counting calories or carbs, no more thinking about food all the time. It really is possible to lose weight and gain health all without ever going on another diet. Now, if you'd like to call in and talk with me, the number is 818-602-4929. Again, 818-602-4929. So my goal for this show is to provide inspiration and information. And today I'm going to do my best to inspire you, at first with a little help from Oprah, and then we're going to get to some questions from listeners and take some calls. Okay, so here is a quote from Oprah that I really love. She says, quote, "Step away from the mean girls and say bye-bye to feeling bad about your looks. Are you ready to stop colluding with a culture that makes so many of us feel physically inadequate? Say goodbye to your inner critic and take this pledge to be kinder to yourself and others." This is a call to arms, a call to be gentle, to be forgiving, to be generous with yourself. The next time you look into the mirror, try to let go of the storyline that says you're too fat or too sallow, too ashy or too old, your eyes are too small, your nose is too big. Just look into the mirror and see your face. When the criticism drops away, what you will see then is just you without judgment. And that is the first step towards transforming your experience of the world. Unquote. So amen to that, Oprah. So let's answer that call to arms and join the army of people, men as well as women, who want a new way to feel good about themselves and don't want to be defined by the number on the scale. So think about this. Think about yourself. Think about the person that you see in the mirror. Is that person there for others? Is that person accepting and non-judgmental of others? Is that person understanding, fun-loving, intelligent, open-minded, happy, positive, friendly, available, reflective, loyal, responsible, creative, strong, generous, loving, persistent, tenacious? Do you do the right thing even when no one's looking? If any of those qualities describe you, then guess what? You need to transform your perception and experience of yourself to a more realistic one. That's how you win the diet war, by making peace with yourself. And because, you know, here's a radical thought. Maybe you don't have to lose weight to feel good about yourself. You know, what a concept, right? How crazy, how revolutionary. So what would happen if you accepted yourself as you are right now, whatever you weigh, whatever you look like? Like Oprah said, without judgment. Self-acceptance leads to feeling good about yourself, and feeling good about yourself improves the quality of your life, makes you happier, makes you enjoy life more. And when that happens, you're not going to turn to food for comfort or distraction, because you don't need comfort or distraction when you're feeling positive. And by the way, when I say self-acceptance, that doesn't mean complacency. Even if you are actively trying to lose weight, it's important to feel good about yourself during the process. So don't make your self-worth contingent on some magical number on the scale. You can have self-esteem even when you want to lose weight, even while you're losing weight. So, you know, I think we've established that what makes you a likable, lovable person has nothing to do with how much you weigh, but it has to do with who you are. And when you stop striving to lose weight in order to gain self-esteem, you can discover that. You can discover who you are and really appreciate yourself. And that's pretty awesome. Okay, if you'd like to call in and talk about this subject or anything else related to food weight or body image, the number is 818-602-4929. Again, 818-602-4929. Okay, let's get to some listener questions. So this is from Brooks, and he's in Georgia. And he says, I was blessed with a fast metabolism and pretty good genetics and height, and have pretty much eaten anything I wanted over the years with no effect. Well, Brooks, I'm glad you're counting your blessings because you are a lucky guy. Okay, he goes on to say, but recently when I reached my 30s, it slowed down a bit. I can't eat what I want anymore. What are your thoughts on having good genetics or bad? And how does that play into most people's weight issues? I guess that's more than one question. I'm going to do my best to answer all of them. So, look, there's no question that genetics plays a part in your metabolism. My dad can eat whatever he wants and never gain an ounce. And he's like this skinny guy. And you can't even believe how much he eats. And my mom works out all the time, and she has a hard time losing weight, even though she eats really healthy. Like, she was making granola before anyone even knew what granola was. She's, like, super clean eater, but she has a hard time losing weight. So I'm lucky to take after my dad. But the good news is that, you know, even if I took off after my mom, the good news is that you are not stuck with the metabolism you have. So weight training and the right kind of eating can help you rev up your metabolism. Now, I deal with the psychology of eating, and I can tell you that lots of people become so focused on what they think they should eat that they lose touch with how to eat intuitively. And there are two reasons why people end up overeating. Now, one is that they don't eat enough. As counterintuitive as that may sound, they don't eat enough, or they go so long between meals that they get so hungry, so starving, so ravenous that when they finally eat something, they just can't stop. The other reason that people use food for comfort or distraction or to resolve some kind of inner conflict. For example, I've talked about this before, lots of people say they eat so much their stomach hurts and that they feel physically uncomfortable. That's a way of translating emotional uncomfortable feelings into physical, and translating emotional pain into physical pain. Or they feel empty, they feel lonely, so they eat to fill the void, that kind of thing. But when you get back into tuning into what your body physically needs, you can make choices that are good for your health and also don't feel depriving. And when you feed and nourish your body and you get the right kind of exercise, you can raise your metabolism no matter how old you are. So I'd say that genetics plays a part, but you don't have to be locked into whatever the genetics are. So hopefully, Brooks, that answers your question. Now here's a question from Lucy. She asks, what is your exercise regimen like, and what are some of your favorite/effective workouts? Well, I take figure skating lessons, which is so much fun and so tough. And I do Krav Maga, which is an Israeli martial arts, and it's really, really challenging. In fact, I am taking my orange belt test in 2 weeks, and I am super excited and nervous about it. Oh my God, it's going to be so scary. And I take my 154-pound Great Dane out for power walks. See, I'm really a... Whoops. Caller, hold on. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show.
Nina?
Hi. Hi, welcome to the show. Is this Nick?
Yes, this is Nick. Hi.
Hi. Good to hear from you.
Yes. This is talking about hitting a nail on the head. I've called in before, and I've been working on food and not being on the scale and how it'll take so much part of my life. And a couple of things you said today. I got some really bad news, and I'm still not going on the scale. I hope I make sense here. I'm really doing well with that, like food taking over my life and just concentrating on other things.
That's great. And that's great.
When the closest person in my life, I found out, is very, very ill. And I've known this person since I've been very young. And all of a sudden, I realized, like, food isn't important, and what is important. And now dealing with my this person with his illness, I find myself, if this is really funny, we talk on the phone because he doesn't live in the same city as mine, and when we talk about knowing each other for so long about food, funny things happened when we were places we ate. Remember this place we ate here, and we ate this food at this time or this time, or remember that Sunday we ate that was this, and we would just food, how we related to our relationship and having such a wonderful time, but it all related to food and restaurants. Remember that steak we ate, or this, and how it's funny how food in my life, and how it's always been like, it was a pain in the ass, excuse me, food, this.
But we're on internet radio, you can say anything.
It really is bringing us close together, and him being ill, this is the food we're laughing. We're not running out and eating. We're using food as just something to, we can laugh about this illness that he has, and by using food.
Well, first of all, Nick, I'm so sorry to hear about your friend. That must be devastating. But you say that you remember the food you ate, but it sounds like what you're remembering is the good times and the connection and the camaraderie and the friendship that you had over those meals.
Yeah, it just always food. You see these movies, the Italian family sitting around. Everything is important. What's grandma going to make today? And the Jewish family we have, well, my grandmother would make korplop or whatever it is. And everything was always around food. Everything was around food. We would laugh, food. And even now, it's food. And here it is, a week ago, I called up and say, I'm fighting not to stand on a scale, and it's a bad thing if I do this. It's a bad thing if I eat this. But yeah. Here I am in a time of trouble, and we're laughing about food. I mean, food's a good thing.
Well, you know, people ask me all the time, why food? Why do they have this ambivalent relationship to food? And I think you've probably heard me say this before, that food represents relationship. You know, our first experience of food is being fed as babies, so it's bound up with the experience of being held and feeling safe and connected and you know, warm and good, and that in our psyches that experience gets fused with food. So, you know, when you have a problem with relationships with other people, or people become unsafe, you can turn to food. If you have a problem, if you're worried, you can also turn away from it. You know, some people turn away from both relationships and food. So, but I digress. So I guess you're saying that you've gotten kind of a perspective this week, that this, you've been battling the scale and you've been battling, you know, what to eat, not eat, and all of that. But when a friend is diagnosed with a serious illness, it makes you realize what you value and what you don't.
Yeah, exactly. And that, but again, the talk about it isn't like I want to go pick him up and go eat that food.
Right.
It's just, it's food. It's in our life. It's in everything I do. It's good news, bad news. It's been a rough week. But anyways, it's just that. But talking to you about food, and you were bringing in what you were talking about earlier from someone who would send something in. It was so true. And I won't take up all your time here, but it was just
it resonated. You know,
thank you very much.
Well, wait,
Thank you very much for taking me.
Nick, yeah. I just want to say one thing, which is that here you are having, in a crisis, I mean, it sounds like this is traumatic. This is someone that you've known your whole life. And I'm sure that you're desperately worried about this person. And yet, you're not going back to that old behavior and distracting yourself with, oh, how much do I weigh? You're really dealing directly with, that's what it sounds like, you're directly coping with this news instead of distracting yourself with a number on the scale. And so I hope you can be really proud of yourself, because that's a big test. You know, when things really hit us hard in life, often we go back to those old coping mechanisms. And you're not.
Yeah,
you're dealing with this.
I have to give a little chuckle, because today I went into the bathroom in the morning and I was just walking. I looked and the scale was there and looking at me. It was like I was looking at Oprah and didn't care and walked right by it.
The scale was looking at you.
Yeah, and you. I want nothing from you. And I just walked right by it.
Next you'll get the scale to move out. Next the scale can move out of the house.
My God, what will I do then?
Live your life. Scale free.
Live my life.
Yes.
Thank you.
Oh, you're
very,
welcome.
Very much again.
And again, I'm so sorry about your friend.
Okay.
All right. I'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. So interesting. You know, Nick is a regular caller, and I was actually just going to talk about him in reference to the question about what do I do for exercise, because, you know, a few weeks ago, Nick called and said that he felt really lazy because he just couldn't get himself to get out of the house to take a walk. And it turned out he was not really a fan of walking. You know, here's the thing. If you don't love it, you're not going to do it. Like, I have friends who are always looking for a quick fix to lose, you know, 10, 20, 30 pounds fast. And they go from spinning to cardio bar to boot camp to whatever the latest and most brutal form of exercise is, without really considering do they like it or not. It's just like, can I lose weight fast on this? And then they end up feeling bad about themselves because they can't stick to anything, so it's always a disaster. I really need to send them to Craig Ramsey, my new best friend, who was here on the show last week, who's a fitness trainer and just so amazing. But look, if spinning is your thing, you know, terrific. You're going to get yourself to spin class, and you're going to have the benefits of spin class. But if you hate spinning, you can't force yourself. You got to find something you love to do. That's why, you know, figure skating is what I love to do. Krav Maga, I love to do it. Taking Zane the Dane out is just, you know, wonderful to be outside and just be with him. And he's a rock star. Like, people slow down and say, like, that's the George Clooney of dogs. So it's always a fun time when I'm taking Zane on a power walk. So find something you love to do exercise-wise and keep doing it. And then you're going to see the results. Now, Switching gears just a little bit, I've gotten a few questions from listeners who tell me they avoid social situations, especially in the summer, especially barbecues and swim parties and all of that stuff. They totally avoid these social situations because they're afraid people are judging them. And they're afraid they're going to be, as more than one person has phrased it, the biggest person in the room. And that makes me want to talk about comparing yourself to others and then what to do about all this self-consciousness. Comparing yourself to others just makes you feel bad. And when you feel bad, that can lead to overeating just to feel better. You know, so maybe, you know, the problem isn't your weight or your actual size. Maybe, again, it's the size of your self-esteem. So one of the most important things you can do for yourself is stop comparing yourself to others. So a few years ago, this woman named Zoe called me and asked about joining my weekly support group. And Zoe struggled with binge eating, and she thought it would be helpful to connect with other people who were also struggling in a group situation. And I think groups are very helpful because you meet other people who are going through the same thing. It's a relief to know you are not the only person in the world who feels out of control with food, and you're not the only person who eats stuff you don't even like, and then you can't stop. You're not the only person who thinks about lunch when you're having breakfast, or who, there's another caller. I'll hold that thought. Hi, caller.
Hi, caller.
Hello.
Hello? I can't hear you.
Hello.
Hello. Who's this?
Hi. Can you tell me where is the address? Karen told me an address. There is a thing like that. She told me 19562 Ventura, second floor.
I think you have the wrong number. You're talking to the Dr. Nina of the Dr. Nina Show.
Hello?
Okay, I'm sorry, I can't help you. That was weird. Okay, not sure if that was like a crank or a real thing or whatever, but we'll just move on. Okay, so like I was saying, groups are where you feel, you recognize that you're not the only person in the world doing the crazy things you think you're doing with food. You're not the only one who thinks about lunch when you're having dinner, or who plans a dinner while you're still eating lunch. So groups can be really helpful. And Zoe kept calling and telling me that she was going to come to the group, but, you know, something always came up and she never showed up. And so finally, I said, you know, Zoe, you have a lot of good reasons for why you can't get yourself to this group, but it seems like something's coming up every week. So maybe there's a part of you that feels conflicted. Maybe there's a part of you that doesn't want to come to this group. And she said, yeah, she was. She was really anxious about the group. And she was afraid, as she put it, that she would be the fattest person in the room. All right, let's try this call thing again. Hi, this is Dr. Nina.
It's not Karina Doni.
No, you have the
Hello?
You have the wrong number. Oh, my God. Okay. So Zoe said she was afraid that she would be the fattest one in the room. And this fear also affected her personal life. She wouldn't meet friends in restaurants because she would be afraid that she was the fattest one there. She didn't want to go to the gym for the same reason. She was concerned that she'd be the biggest person in the room, so concerned that she stayed home. And when Zoe was home, she felt lonely and empty and sad, so you can probably figure out that she ate for comfort. So Zoe was really hard on herself, too. She was always accusing herself of having no willpower. She told herself she was disgusting. She told herself she was gross. She was very judgmental and very focused on her body as the thing that most defined her. So to stop comparing yourself to others, it's important to challenge the negative ideas about yourself that make you feel like there's something wrong with you in the first place. So let's just take the fear of being the biggest person in the room. Let's say you are the biggest person in the room, whether that room is a gym, an office, a restaurant, a party, or whatever. What then? What do you imagine people are thinking about you? And I asked Zoe this question, and she said, well, other people would think she had no willpower, they would think she was disgusting and gross, and they wouldn't want to have anything to do with her, they wouldn't like her. And isn't that interesting? Because that was exactly, I mean the exact same words, that was exactly how she described herself. She was harsh on herself, and she thought other people would think the same harsh thoughts that she thought about herself. So basically, she was projecting her own mean thoughts about herself out into other people, and then directing them back at herself, thinking that she could read their minds, and that's what they thought of her. You know, I once had a patient, she had terrible stage fright. She was a singer, and she would get paralyzed with anxiety because she thought the audience was looking at her and thinking that she was too big, too curvy, too fat. That's how she would say it, which to her meant she was not good enough and they didn't like her. And that, again, that's what she thought about herself. She thought she wasn't good enough. And then she kind of sent those self-critical thoughts out into the audience, and then back at her. She imagined the audience thought the same thing of her that she thought of herself. So we worked together on the judgment she had and all the criticism she had about herself. And she did develop a kinder, more accepting, and much more reasonable relationship to herself. And she felt so much better that, you know, eventually she went back out on tour. And she called me halfway through, she was like in Boston or something, and she told me that the tour was going really well. And she said, I think different people are coming to my shows because the audience seems to really like me. The audience is friendly and supportive, and like I get such a good vibe from them. Well, she did not have a different audience. Her fans were exactly the same, but her attitude towards herself had changed. And so she projected her own accepting attitude into the audience and then back at her. So most of us are not psychic. We do not actually work for the psychic network. And even if you do, you may not be psychic. So we don't actually know what others are thinking. But if you're sure that other people are thinking the most awful, critical, and judgmental thoughts of you, then you might want to investigate the way you relate to yourself. So let's also look at your relationship to others. And let me just open the phone lines back up for everyone except the person who was looking for directions. The number to call in is 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. Okay, so we just talked about your relationship to yourself. Now let's look at your relationship to others. Back to Zoe. So she was afraid that if she were in fact the biggest one in the room, that the other group members would think they were better than she was, and she didn't want to feel inferior to her, which I thought was a really interesting kind of fear, and not one that I had really come across before, or not one that anyone had articulated. But it goes back to her childhood. She started, you know, talking about it and kind of explained. And in childhood, she was always in competition with her siblings. They were constantly trying to outdo each other in order to be the best. And it was everything. It was things like, who could eat your ice cream more slowly? And whoever ate their ice cream more slowly would win the competition. Or, you know, who could run around the block the fastest? Just random weird things. Who could take the fastest shower? Or just everything was a competition. How many games of Sorry or, you know, Monopoly did you win versus your other siblings? So anyway, not only did Zoe think the group would think mean thoughts about her, she imagined they'd relate to her as her brother and sister did, and she didn't want to experience that kind of rivalry again. So when you can see how your past experiences are impacting your expectations in the present, you can kind of separate the past from present and challenge those assumptions. So Zoe was able to say, hey, you know what? Maybe people in the support group would feel superior to her. Maybe they would welcome her and make her feel safe. Hi, caller. This is Dr. Nina. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dr. Nina. This is Christina calling. How are you?
Hi, Christina. Another regular caller. Nice to hear from you.
Oh, it's so great to be able to call in. I've actually got, you mentioned a couple of things about group therapy, and then another thing, the opening to your show was a quote from Oprah, whom I absolutely adore, and I have a couple of things that I've been wrestling with and would just love your professional opinion. They're two sort of separate topics. I don't know if you just want to answer one or maybe we just have time for one, but maybe I'll ask both of them. The first one is, for me, it just seems that in terms of individuals who are struggling with eating issues, and you have a wide range of people who might be 50 to 100 pounds overweight, people of normal size, people who are, let's say, severely underweight. And of course, we also, I guess there's specific psychological terms that have been given to individuals with all of these things, whether it's binge eating disorder, anorexia, bulimia, and so on and so forth. My question is, it seems absurd to me that the treatment for all of this would be the same for all of these individuals. It seems as if there should be very different types of psychological and or physical physiological treatment for people. So I just wanted to throw that out there. That was a question that I have for that. That's my first one.
Okay. All right. You tell me the second one, and then I'll answer the first one.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. And then the second one. So again, I love Oprah. I remember growing up with her and watching all kinds of shows. And I just you talked earlier as well on the show about being super judgmental. So I very well, and I just have to be honest, I could be projecting my own insecurities onto her. And I've talked in other calls about my upbringing, and I can't use that as an excuse forever. But
an explanation, Christina, not an excuse.
Right. Thank you. So it seems so disheartening for someone like Oprah, who has so much power and access and financial means, and to see her struggle all of these years with her own personal weight, and to see her try all different types of things. I remember when she walked on stage with her jeans and she had lost so much weight, and then she gained it back, and then she found Bob Green, which was her personal trainer, nutritionist, lost it. Sort of the standard yo-yo kind of dieting, and now she's on Weight Watchers and is actually their spokesperson.
Yeah, well, she owns part of Weight Watchers, which maybe there's a relationship there. I'm not sure.
Exactly.
Saying anything.
And so and she's gone back and forth saying now she's mass, and don't quote me exactly, but my understanding is she said things like throughout the years, oh, now I've mastered, you know, my relationship with my body, or this or that or the other. And just for someone who's also struggling, I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't feel like I have the resources, the finance, and it's just disappointing, it's sad, it's disheartening, it's scary to see her struggle, and it makes me think, has society found the solution? I'm not so sure. And then, you know, what do we do? And I'm not saying not to give up and not to try, but again, it's so scary to see her struggle so severely. And I'm like, how am I going to, you know, overcome my own personal issues? Well, and I feel I know your possible, but you know what just maybe a summary again as to what you feel you think the solution, or maybe why she's still struggling, I guess.
Well,
those
are great questions, and I think actually one, they're connected. I can't really speak to Oprah's situation. I don't treat her. I don't know her. But boy, would I like to get her in my office. because here's the thing. With the exception of kind of a psychotic anorexia in which your brain is so starved or there's something going on with your brain, I do think anorexia in some cases is completely different, and you know, you cannot treat it psychologically. You've got to restore someone's weight, and really it really is very brain based, as opposed to other things like bulimia and binge eating, which is mind based. So in terms of the treatment, look, bulimia, binge eating, an unhealthy, unhappy relationship to food is like a weed. They're just different weeds with the same root. So that's why the treatment is the same, because you got to get to the root issues of why each individual has developed the symptoms that they have. Again, binge eating is not the problem. Binge eating is the solution to the problem. The problem may be difficulty, being lonely, difficulty dealing with conflicted feelings or thoughts, difficulty, you know, dealing with situations, tough emotions, you know, all of those things. Mm-hmm. So when you figure out what the root is, then of course the weeds go away. But they're just different responses to the same thing. And that is why the treatment is the same.
Okay.
It's figuring out what's going on in the unconscious. And now this brings me to your second question. because mm-hmm. we live in a world which because I think this is mainly driven by managed care in the last decades, which says, hey, you should fix yourself in, you know, 8 to 10 sessions. And you're not you're not broken, but somehow you should fix yourself. You can't. Right. You know, you're supposed to like somehow understand the complexities that have caused you to develop whatever symptoms, and you should just be able to do that in a couple of months when it's taken a lifetime to develop. And because of managed care, there are all these brief therapies that have come out, and people are moving farther and farther away from what I do, which is psychoanalysis. And I was just, it was just fortuitous and serendipitous that I even became a psychoanalyst, because when I was in grad school in the year 2000, and people were like, oh, psychoanalysis, you know, nobody does that. That's a relic of the past. That's an anachronism. Like, who would do that? And I happened to be trained by a psychoanalyst who specialized in eating disorders, and I realized, oh, wait, no. It's not a relic of the past. So all of this is sort of a way to say that what is probably missing with Oprah, and what is missing from most of the treatments that I see and what I hear mm-hmm. about when people come to see me after having had gastric bypass surgery, after having lap band surgery, after being in 10 different programs and spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in right. one inpatient program after another, is no one's talking about the unconscious. What's out of awareness but not out of operation, the root. We can't see the root. It's unconscious. Things that we don't realize we think and feel have implications on our behavior. And so if you don't understand where these behaviors come from, and you only treat them like, if, you know, as a behavioralist, like maybe that works with phobias, but it doesn't work with complicated, complex things like disordered eating or even addictions. It's very, very deep and has to do with that which our mind protects ourselves from, but which is still gets enacted. So I would say, Oprah, if you're listening, come see me. I will get to your unconscious. I will dig it out, and then you'll be done. Done, done, done. No more of this. You can, you know, sell your stock in Weight Watchers.
I know, I saw that night. I was sort of surprised when she had joined that, but you know, it goes to show that, you know, this affects everybody. This can, eating disordered and disordered eating can absolutely affect anybody regardless of age, race, gender, financial status. And I see what you're saying, because I do remember a lot of the things she tried were focused on, for example, getting a trainer such
Weeds.
As Bob Green, and
yeah.
focused on food, or focused on, I remember, the Slim Fast, where it was basically a liquid diet. And the only thing I can say is I do remember she did have somebody, I don't know if you're familiar with Janine Roth.
Yes,
she
yes.
touches a little bit on what you do about being kinder to yourself. I don't believe, and eating when you're hungry, stopping when you're full, sort of the intuitive eating. I don't think she's a psychoanalyst.
No, she's
and
not a
really
therapist.
Delves into
no, no.
you know,
she's not a therapist.
History?
She's not a therapist.
Yeah.
See,
well, there
I,
we go.
See,
that
I,
makes sense then.
I would say, I mean, I really like Janine Roth, and for someone who is not a trained therapist and not really trained, it's her own experience and her own thinking and reflections that have that, and I think she's
yeah.
fabulous. But she's only trained to go so far. And I say yes. You know what it. You must be nicer to yourself, but you must also figure out why you're not nice to yourself. Are you are you identified with someone who treated you in a certain way, and now you're treating yourself that same way? Or did you have sort of an absence of structure? Kids who have an absence of structure in their lives sometimes create like an internal mean parent that's meaner than any parent would ever be. Well, with many exceptions, but you know, where did this come from? Because if you don't figure out where it comes from, you can't change it. And that's why I say all the time that mantras don't work. Power of positive thinking. You can't positive think yourself out of feeling negative about yourself. You could say, I am lovable. The universe loves me 1,000,000,000 times. But if you don't feel lovable and you feel unloved, you're not going to convince yourself that you're lovable. You've got to look at, why do I feel unlovable? where does this come from? What relationships from the past are that were between me and another person often are now between me and me? And
right.
deal with those original wounds. And that's how you heal for good.
And that makes so much sense, because before I found you, I had read Janine's books, and I thought you guys were a little similar, but I do recall now she never delved into past history and childhood and upbringing and so on and so forth. So that absolutely makes sense, and that might also, as you mentioned, that could be the reason, you know, one of the big pieces that Oprah might have been missing, despite her trying so many different things, like many of us have. So thank you for turning around the disheartening, disappointing, sad words that I use to just offering hope. So I appreciate that, and I continue to follow more of the psychoanalytic approach as opposed to all of the diet, food, sugar, exercise, counting calories, carbs, whatever. It's very different, and I really appreciate the different perspective.
Oh, thank you, Christina, and thank you for your thoughtful questions, as always.
Yes. Thank you. I look forward to calling in again.
I'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Nina.
Bye-bye. Christina. Bye. You know, great question. I also just want to say something really fast about blame versus explain, because Christina kind of brought it up, and she said, I don't want to blame my parents. I don't want to blame the past. And I said, explain. Look, the thing is, if you're a victim and you're like, oh, it's their fault, they treated me this way, oh, poor me, and you're just pointing the finger at the past as a way to justify feeling bad in the present, that is blame, and that gets nobody anywhere. I mean, that is not what I'm talking about. But when you say, okay, look, this happened to me, and this is how it affected me, and I need to really understand that and heal the past in the service of understanding the present and feeling differently in the present, that's explaining. So, you know, you have to understand where something comes from in order to deal with it effectively so that you don't have it in the future. So if you say, well, I'm not nice to myself because I was always, you know, being yelled at as a kid and could never do anything right, and now I feel like I'm not good enough, and now I'm yelling at myself all the time and telling myself I'm never not good enough and I can never do anything right. You know, there's no way you could say, oh, you know, I do everything right or I'm okay without really looking at how you identified with the past and have brought it with you and say, okay, I see where it comes from. I'm going to deal with how that made me feel. I'm going to separate the past from the present. And that way, you know, you put the past in the past. That's the whole goal. We want the past to be in the past and not follow you into the present and haunt the present. So this is sort of, you know, kind of goes back to what I was talking about with Zoe and her siblings, that even though, you know, the people in the group, she'd never met them, she still expected them to see her the way her siblings had seen her, and to be competitive and always trying to one-up her. And that was pretty, you know, permeated her life, too. So she was expecting... Oh, another call. Hi, caller, this is Dr. Nina.
Yeah, Dr. Nina, this is Oprah from Burbank. How are you?
Hi, Larry.
I heard the other caller, and it was so the questions were so great, and the feedback was so great that it brought up a really tough question that I'm even reluctant to ask. But you know, I'll just dive in if you want.
Okay, go ahead. Yes, I'm ready. I'm ready.
Yeah. Peeling back all the onion layers to, you know, basically I feel I've had a lot of insight for the last 20, even 30 years, and especially in the last year. And nevertheless, the feeling that I'm beginning to get is that I won't have or attain or achieve any I don't want to say quantum leap, that's just not realistic, but any significant unconscious game until my mom, who I live with, is gone. And that's why I say it's a really tough question. I am in a situation where I live with her, and without going into details, I'm unable to leave, or I'm quote-unquote unable to leave. You know the difference. I'm stuck here, or I feel like I'm stuck here, and to be in this toxic environment, and it's toxic for me because it's from both of us, our dynamic, my mom and I, not from her, that that I really, there won't be major change for the better for me until we're no longer together. And like I say, being stuck here, it's kind of a conundrum. So I have.
That must be a very painful thought to have, and to kind of call in and share it with me and with the listeners, I think takes a lot of courage. At first, I apologize for the fact that we only have about 4 minutes left, but if I don't adequately answer this question, I'm sure I can't in 4 minutes, so you feel free to call again, as I know you will.
Okay, in a week, I will do that, but let's see. I should call earlier, but there you have it.
There you have it. Maybe there's a reason that you called it this time, but okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. So, Freud, who, I'm a psychoanalyst, but I'm not Freudian, but there are some kernels of truth from Freud that, of course, you know, he's the father of the unconscious, and he said, what is not remembered is repeated. And so what you're talking about is might be some kind of reenactment of the past. When you're a kid, you don't have the option to leave. You live with your parents. You can't be like, yeah, you know what, I'm getting a job and I'm going to move out. You live with your parents and you just got to deal with whatever comes up. So even though clearly you're an adult living with your adult mother, perhaps you are keeping yourself there, unbeknownst to you, to reenact something from the past that needs to be, an insight is not enough, by the way. Larry, it insight is the beginning. Any thoughts about what is familiar about your dynamic?
Yeah, I as you're talking, I am certain that I was, long story short, ignored, or just sort of, you know, whatever I had presenting from year one through year 18 was, you know, kind of sloughed off like so much dead skin. And my own sort of, I guess I have a quote need to reciprocate that. And it's an unconscious thing. And even coming to that conscious realization, it's, you know, I'm still stuck in the psychodynamic as it were.
Well, what I think you're talking about is that you've created some role reversal. So where originally she ignored, but we'll just say she sort of ignored you, or didn't pay attention to you in a specific way, didn't respond to you. That's the word I'm looking for. She didn't respond to you then, and now perhaps you're not you've mentioned before not wanting to hug her, I think. So she didn't respond, maybe she didn't hug you, she wasn't warm and fuzzy the way you needed, and so now you are playing that role to her. So she's you, the one who wants some connection, craves some kind of contact, and you're the powerful one who's like, nope, I can't go near you. So
yeah, and it's certainly, it's, I'm sorry, go ahead.
So you've repeated the dynamic, but reversed the roles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I have to stress, I mean, that just sounds like a bullseye. This is not a conscious thing. I don't go home and say, gee, I think I'll ignore her.
Totally unconscious.
Payback.
Yeah, totally.
And I like what you said about blame versus awareness of cause and effect. And while anger sometimes comes up with her need to medicate me with food, mostly it's just numb. And that's where I'm stuck, and you know, I have to just be okay with it day by day. But it just seems to be, well, I'm stuck, you know.
But
and that's a lot to share with you in the last 1 minute, but there you have it.
Well, listen, we'll talk about it again, because I think that a lot of people could probably resonate with the idea, oh, I'm running out of time, of that something's unconscious, but yet you're still doing it. And when you make it conscious, then you have a chance to, you know, you can't fight an invisible army, but when it is visible, then you see what you're fighting and you can do battle. And with that, I must say goodbye. Larry, thank you for your very interesting, thoughtful, provocative, deep question. We'll get back to it again.
Yeah, certainly. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye for now.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. And everybody, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio to give you the skinny on weight loss without dieting and anything concerning food, weight, and body image issues. Visit me at winthedietwar.com or find out about my program at kickthediethabit.com. And I'd love to hear from you. So call in, send me a message on Twitter or Facebook with any questions that you'd like me to answer on the show. And I'll see you next week. Bye.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.